Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Here's the podcast for Connecting Faith. Enjoy the conversation.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender. Great to have you here with us this afternoon. Well, are you a list person? I know I am. I love to make a list. I love to cross things off. It helps me to feel effective and like I'm getting things done. Well, what if there were a list that existed to help you love your spouse well? Well, marriage and family experts Mark and Susan Merrill have created a resource for even the busiest and list-conscious husband and wife. Some simple steps to help you get the marriage that you want. Let me tell you a little bit about them. We're going to talk marriage today. Mark Merrill is the founder and president of Family First, a national nonprofit organization dedicated to helping people love their families well. He also hosts the Family Minute, a nationally syndicated daily radio program. He also delivers marriage and parenting wisdom through his blog and podcast on markmerrill.com. In addition to the book we'll be discussing today, List to Love By for Busy Husbands, Mark is also the author of The All-Pro Dad. My husband read that. Great book. Well, Susan Merrill is the director of content for Family First. She also oversees the content creation and digital marketing of all of the Family First platforms. Susan blogs at susan.me, and in addition to authoring the book List to Love By for Busy Wives, she's also the author of The Passionate Mom. She and Mark have five children, and they reside in Tampa, Florida. Susan and Mark, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. We're so glad to be here.
Joe, how are we doing today?
Very well. Thank you. It's good to be here, and it's good to be talking about marriage. I have a husband, so he always likes when I learn things.
That's awesome.
I'm not allowed to share stories, though, so I'm just going to let you two do that. Is that okay?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Don't get in trouble over us.
But, Joe, we need to hear some stories from you, too.
Okay, so let's just jump right into the first question for you. Tell me what inspired you to even write these two separate books. It was so intriguing that there were two.
So we had noticed on our blogs and everything that the posts that really do well are the ones that are really direct with application and have lists. So we realized people want to take action. They just don't often know how. And when our editor talked to us about the book, we came to the conclusion shortly after starting to write it that there was no way to write this book to men and women. It was really two books because what we both need to do is very different. You know, men are different than women. And so it actually turned out to be two books, and that's kind of how it played out.
So are you finding that people are reacting to having that opportunity once you finish a chapter, then it does give you some really great to-do items, something to think about, but also some things to do.
Yeah, actually, we've been really excited about the results because there aren't many books like this where, you know, the wife can get her book, the husband can get his, and we've even called them dueling books. You can do them alone or you can go chapter by chapter because they parallel. And look at the questions at the end. There's always two or three things to work on at the end. And some of those things even entail you asking each other questions. And so it's a great way to come at marriage from your unique identity as a man and a woman and work on it together.
And, Joe, you know what was also awesome to hear and to see is men picking up these books. In fact, we've had several ladies come to us, the wives, and say, you know what, it's amazing. I saw my husband reading a book, and it was like the first time she's ever seen that. So it's really exciting to see men picking up these books and really putting these things into practice.
Because they're short, and it's easy.
Right. They're both short, and that is, it's not intimidating at all because the chapters are short. The advice is really to the point, and then you do get to ask these questions of your spouse, and so it really helps you to have a conversation. And you're right. That's really one of the keys to improving your marriage is having some good conversations, isn't it?
It really is, and we believe that good questions really breed a good conversation, and so that's why throughout the book, and also in the taking the next step part at the end of each chapter that we discussed, we have a lot of questions for husbands and wives to talk about. And we also found that one of the things that husbands and wives really need to address is those expectations in marriage. And a lot of these chapters, a lot of these lists, rather, have to do with expectations. I want to know, what should I expect from my spouse? What should I expect from me? What is fair to expect in our relationship and in our marriage?
Well, in fact, I wrote one of those questions down after reading your chapter about expectations that, Mark, you had some expectations just surrounding food and cleanup when you first came into your marriage. I think that a lot of people could relate to that. Can you share that?
Well, yeah. I realized before we got married, Susan and I were very, very different. She was this big picture, creative kind of personality and had just some incredible gifts. And I was very disciplined, very specific, very kind of an inspector personality. And I wanted everything to be organized and just so. So what I found is that before marriage, sometimes opposites do attract. However, after marriage, many times opposites attack. What was once appealing is now annoying. So what I was drawn to Susan about started to become a bit annoying. And so I expected her to change, to be more like me. And the short story is she started to become more like me, and I realized I didn't like it. We did not need another person in the house like me. And so I realized that the biggest confrontation I had to have in our marriage wasn't with Susan, it was myself. I needed to change my expectation and love her for who she is and celebrate her strengths.
So I think a lot of people probably have that issue, I guess, because I remember just asking my dad, you know, what attracted you to mom? And he said kind of the same thing you wrote about. Well, she was different. She was different than anyone that I knew. But then you do start to wonder if you have this creative type and then you have this not so creative, this kind of disciplined type. How do those kind of go together? Not only at the beginning of your marriage, but even when you have children. So do more questions come up as you're having children and more issues maybe when you're seeing those opposites that attracted that might now be getting a little bit convoluted?
Absolutely. And there's two ways you can look at that. You can look at it like, oh, this is so difficult because they just don't see parenting like I do, or they don't see our marriage like I do. But the really greater opportunity is to see it as, wow, it's a good thing we have four pairs of eyes on these kids because you're seeing things I don't see, and I'm seeing things you don't see. And I think that's just God's plan. You know, if we were exactly alike, we'd only be parenting to half of what our child needs. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Well, and the children are really different, too. And so I've noticed with my own children that they kind of navigate toward different parents depending on what it is that they're looking for. Sometimes they need to be soothed or comforted or encouraged, and sometimes they need to get some things done. And that means a different parent kind of might need to take charge.
Absolutely.
So you write in a chapter called What Your Spouse Is Really Saying When They Say Things Like, I'm fine. Tell me more about that.
Well, we know that a husband and wife kind of speak differently sometimes in terms of how they communicate in their language. And so we call it, you know, sometimes the husband code or the wife code. You kind of almost have to decode what they're saying. And so Susan and I have found that out over the years, and it's very important to be able to understand that. For example, a wife might say, I'm fine. Well, that means I'm not fine, but I'm not ready to talk about it right now. Or, for example, didn't you go out with your friends last weekend, she might say, and that means I know for a fact that you went out with your friends last Friday night, and I want to spend time with you myself this weekend. So those are the kind of things we just have to learn to decode based on what our spouse is saying.
And Susan, are there also some things that husbands say that we need to decode?
Absolutely. I got this from Mark. And again, we tell people, you know, these are just the codes that we found in our marriage, but they can be different. I've got this from Mark means, okay, you're maybe micromanaging me or instructing me in how to do this, and I don't really need that. So whatever your husband does, look at those things, because what we found, and the reason the tagline for this book is, you know, simple steps to the marriage you want, list to love thy for busy wives, is because we find that busy wives and husbands aren't really taking the time to analyze these simple little things that can really just create big arguments over nothing. Mm-hmm. And things like not really interpreting what somebody says can lead to a huge argument. And it wasn't purposeful. If they just really read what the husband was saying, then they'd probably realize, oh, gosh, I'm interjecting myself too much, and he really does have this. I need to back off.
Well, I'm talking to Mark and Susan Merrill today. They've both written individual books called Lists to Love By. One is for busy husbands. One is for busy wives. We're going to talk more with them when we come back on Connecting Faith. If you have a question that maybe has been burning in your heart that you'd like to ask about maybe how you can love your spouse better, you can give us a call. And also, we have a couple of resources available for you that Mark and Susan have generously donated for our listeners. You can give us a call, 877-93-FAITH, 877-933-2484, and we'll be right back on Connecting Faith. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender. Nice to have you here this afternoon. We're talking about marriage, husbands and wives, and how we can be better spouses. Talking to Mark and Susan Merrill of Family First. They've both written a book called List to Love By. One is for busy wives, and the other book is for busy husbands. And the reason they've written these books this way is because they've set it up so that we, even though we are busy, can still figure out how to love our spouses well. Well, Mark and Susan, you write a chapter, dedicate a chapter in each book on common mistakes that men and women make in marriage. Mark, would you start with just list a couple of, you know, one or two of the common mistakes that men make that might lead us to a marriage that's not all we want it to be?
Sure, I'd be happy to. And there are so many mistakes that I have, as a husband, have made, but there are some mistakes that all of us men have challenges with. And so one of them is, and a big one I'd say, is we don't listen well. And this is something that I have struggled with for a long, long time. I'm a bottom line kind of guy. So the fewer words, the better. And Susan wants to give me the whole background to the story and paint the entire picture and let me see the entire canvas. But I'm interested just to see what does she need me to hear, and then I can give her the answer. So that's something I am still learning to do, and that is to listen well. A second thing that is very, very important to wives is for us to understand. So not just listen with the intent to respond, just what we want to say, but really listen with the intent to understand what she's really saying and what's behind what she's saying, and also understand her feelings. And that means that what we have to do is not only listen, but then we have to repeat back what we hear her saying with the intent to understand. Hmm. And another thing is we just don't understand. We don't know our wives well. And so we need to ask them a lot of questions to understand their dreams and their hopes. Things like, what would your dream house look like? If you could travel anywhere, where would you go? What day of your life would you like to live over again? And things like that.
Mm. Well, and it seems like that would also help you kind of get to know each other a little bit better as well. And everyone likes to be asked about maybe what they're thinking or something in their past or a dream they have for the future, don't they?
No question about it. And it just helps you to really stay in sync with one another, to really connect with one another. So if men can avoid these mistakes, and we have a chapter in the List of Love By books of five common mistakes men and then also wives make in marriage. And so folks will really want to read those to avoid those mistakes that I've made.
You know, Mark, let me ask you a follow-up question on that. If a spouse, be it a husband or a wife, isn't in a place where they can really listen well and their spouse is in a place where they needed to be listened to, what's a good response to just convey that, yes, I'm interested in hearing what you have to say. I really want to have a conversation, but I just can't do it right now.
Yeah, I think, first of all, that the spouse who doesn't feel heard, doesn't feel like they're being listened to, they can say to the other spouse, look at me and say, this is very important, and I want you to hear me. I need you to listen. And so just really to express it rather than thinking that this husband should be able to read my mind.
And, you know, when all our kids were home, and we actually had five teenagers at one time, so you can imagine how busy life was. Mark came up with a great system for me because I was always listening to someone, and how much attention I could give them was always at risk based on how many people were trying to vie for my attention. And so he developed this thing where he'd say, okay, on a scale of 1 to 10, what I'm about to talk to you about is a 9. And that would mean to me, kids, everybody, step away to your rooms. I have to talk to Daddy. Now, if he said, hey, I need to talk to you, and it's a 3, so just know I need to talk to you, but I'm going to wait because I can see you're busy, that meant I just needed to check up with them later. But it helped me really cut through, okay, how important is this because my time is divided.
And it was a really, really practical tool because it worked. And if one of us said to the other, this is a 8, 9, or 10, we knew that it was important for the other to listen.
Right, and you can have a 3 or 4 conversation while you're standing in the kitchen preparing dinner and your kids are around, but you probably can't have a 9 or 10 conversation when your kids are around and you're trying to make dinner.
No. Well, and if you try to, then the other person is not assured that you are really listening well.
Well, and also it's important, Joe, not to have that 8, 9, or 10 conversation other times as well. For example, if it's late at night and both of you are tired from a long day, or when someone is rushing to get to the airport.
Like I did once, Mark.
Yeah, she did that to me as well, where she stopped me and started talking about something really important, and I've got to leave for the airport. So timing is also very important as to when we talk to our spouse about deep topics.
Although I've found, you mentioned teenagers, that it's really about 11:15 p.m. That's when they want to have those important conversations. So I have figured out ways to just keep myself awake.
Oh, my goodness. This is one of my favorite stories because I did that. Mark needs more sleep than I do, and so he would often go to bed at an hour. And if you're right, if you have teenagers and they're out, guess what? They come home, and they are chatty because they're just wired. And so there are so many times when he would go to bed, and I would just kind of lay down on the couch, take a little cat nap, and the minute those kids came in the door, I was up. I would follow them up to the room, and I would just hang up their clothes for them as they undress and listen to them chatter, and you get the best information if you want to be available to listen to your kids when they want to talk.
I have a feeling you're going to have to write a book on how to list to love your teenager by. So just get started on that right now, and you can tell that story in that book as well.
We're going to call and interview you.
And Joe, we've had 5 teenagers, and now they're all in their 20s, so we do have a little bit of experience with that.
I'm sure.
Not always a good experience. Not always a good experience. We learn from trial and error.
I think those are fun conversations to have with other parents who are going through the same thing, because you automatically get this head nod like, I hear you. I understand. Well, Susan, I didn't mean to ignore you with the two most common mistakes that women tend to make that can negatively affect their marriage. Can you share one or two?
Yeah. So one of them that I tell people about is, you know, you keep a list of wrongs, and we really, really can't do that because then we pull them into the next argument, and that's unfair, and it just escalates. So, you know, when you've had a discussion and you've forgiven each other and you've resolved it, really put it to bury it and don't ever bring it up. Another one is avoiding intimacy. I think this is something that I talk about a lot. You know, not all marriages is the same, but in our marriage, Mark has for sure, a higher sex drive. And for me to avoid intimacy communicates to him that I don't care and that I'm putting other things first. Because usually my excuse would be, oh, well, I'm tired, or I have to get up early tomorrow morning with one of the kids. And that's really saying, okay, you're second choice. So don't avoid intimacy. Figure out ways to do that. And we had 5 teenagers. You've got to be creative if you're going to be intimate with 5 teenagers. But you know what? Do it. Set aside time and don't avoid it.
Or build a guest house.
Yeah, exactly. yeah, we could tell a story. But maybe Dater Joe will tell a story to you off the air.
All right. Well, you list some really, I mean, your chapter on five great ways to harden your heart. Those are a couple of the things that you list there. And it does kind of seem like a snowball effect sometimes, that maybe if you start thinking critical thoughts, then those may stay in your mind for a little bit, but eventually they make their way out, don't they?
Absolutely. I have this thing I call the frustration formula. And when we have expectations in marriage and they're not met, and we don't deal with them, like, was this an unrealistic expectation, or let me talk to my spouse about it, then unmet expectations lead to frustration. Frustration leads to bitterness, and that's where the heart hardens. And after that is where we see so many marriages failing, because bitterness leads to despair. And when there's despair, there's no hope, and that's when people start looking for options to exit. And you don't want to let bitterness creep into your marriage. So you have to deal with unmet expectations and the frustration you're feeling.
It sounds like the expectations word popped up a lot as I read through your books, and it really does seem like it pops up a lot as you have conversations with friends of parts of their relationship that might be frustrating. Why is that so difficult for us to have these unmet expectations that we don't even know where they came from?
So it's so interesting. Our oldest daughter got married last year, and this is why this word keeps coming up, because it was a blast to plan her wedding. But walking through it and then watching her say her vows, it occurred to me, oh my goodness, that was so me. We say in marriage, in the vows, for better or worse, for richer or poorer, in sickness and in health. But in our minds, as a young bride and groom, we only expect for better, in health, and in richer. We don't ever contemplate that every single life has difficult seasons. And therefore, every single marriage has difficult seasons. And because those things can come sooner or later, if we do not practice loving well in the better times, we are not prepared to love well in the worst times. We say it in our vows to expect better or worse, and we need to realistically anticipate that.
And Joe, also, Susan and I believe that more marriages might survive if people remembered that better often comes after worse. And so the solution is to work through challenges together as a team.
Well, and it does sometimes feel like, hey, maybe I'm all alone in this, but you're really not. And that goes right back to that listening conversation. That might be a 9 or 10 conversation.
Right, right. And a lot of marriages, a lot of people are lonely in that marriage, because I have to say, we're just not as good at communicating as we used to be. And I think a lot of that is because of social media.
And the one thing, in the books, we have 6 things to do when you're lonely in marriage. And loneliness in marriage is a huge thing. You might be right next to your spouse, but you're still lonely. And so we address that issue in the books.
Well, we're going to talk a little bit about social media when we come back. We have to take a break here at the end of the hour, but I'm talking to Mark and Susan Merrill about their books, Lists to Love By, and we'll be right back on Connecting Faith. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. We're talking about love today, love in marriage, by Mark and Susan Merrill, who have each authored a book. Mark's is called List to Love By for Busy Husbands, and Susan's is called List to Love By for Busy Wives. Mark is the founder and president of Family First. Susan's the director of content for Family First. She oversees all of the creative content and digital marketing for that organization. Susan blogs at susan.me, and Mark blogs at markmail.com. We'll have a link to their website on our website as well at myfaithradio.com. And if you're listening today and you'd love to maybe improve your marriage and communication within your marriage,
We do have a couple of their resources to give away. You can give us a call at 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH. And we'll try to get those in your hands. Well, Mark and Susan, before we took that break, you were talking about things to do when you're lonely in marriage. And I've read so much and even heard from people that one of the things that can cause maybe some problems in marriage is people who are lonely and kind of surfing social media. Can you talk more about the dangers with that?
Absolutely. We are finding this to be a huge cause for, just affairs, emotional needs being met by someone from a long time ago, connecting with somebody who doesn't know you in your town, and so therefore it's an easy way to be covert in a relationship. Social media is a wonderful thing. It helps us keep up with so many more people than we used to be able to. However, it can also be a place where you find comfort if you're lonely in your marriage, and you really have to protect yourself. And we really encourage couples to share each other's passwords to their social media, to have accountability in that way that you can check each other's phones at any time. Not that you should suspect, but just so you know that each other can do that, because the first sign of somebody who is doing something online that they shouldn't be doing is to change their password. So it's a great heads up to say, well, why would you do that? Comparison shopping, I call it right now, my new name for it is the Insta Life. Everybody is scanning Instagram, beautiful pictures of everybody's highlight reel and vacation and the awesome things their family's doing. And they tend to feel, wow, everybody's life is so much greater than mine. And what we don't see is that's just one picture they posted in a month. Mm. And it's not, doesn't tell the themes. And again, we've talked about everybody has seasons of great joy and great struggle. And you cannot, if you're not good at bracing yourself against that Insta life fever, then you really should limit how much time you spend on it.
And Joe, also what happens with social media, and like Susan said, this Insta life, is that it starts this thing called comparison. And comparison, more and more, even today, more so than any other time in our history that I can think of, is we're comparing more and more. And social media is a big part of that. And comparison leads to discontentment. It leads to, if I only had blank, then I'd be happy. If I only had a wife like them, if I only had a husband like her, then I'd be happy. If I had a job like them, then I'd be happy. And it goes on and on and on. And so really this whole advent of social media has created more and more comparison and more discontentment. And so we really need to look at Hebrews chapter 12, verse 1, that we need to throw off everything that hinders us and run the race that God has set before us, not somebody else.
Well, in your chapter about loneliness, six things to do when you're lonely in marriage, you just mentioned something maybe we should stay away from, but you also mentioned things that we should lean into. Can you talk about one of those?
Sure. We've got to be proactive. And so if one spouse is lonely in marriage, for example, they can just sit back and be lonely. But it really does take a husband or a wife or both to make the first move. And so if you're feeling isolated, chances are your spouse is too. So take the first step to reconnect with them, just a small gesture, just letting them know how you feel. So healing can't begin if the other spouse is not aware of it. So that's really the first step.
And there's so many people when we say that will say, but my husband is. Well, but my husband, And I always say, okay, when you arrive in heaven, God is not going to talk to you about you as a couple. He's going to talk to you as you. Did you do everything you could despite what your husband did? And in the very least, when you take these small actions, like making the first move, forgiving past hurts, attempting to spend time together, you will know that God sees what you do and that he's proud of you for doing that, especially if he sees that, the response was not what you hoped for. So to do everything as if unto the Lord is the point here, and to trust that trust the results to him.
You know, Susan, I've heard a lot of moms, when they're feeling lonely, will just put a little bit more time into spending time with their kids. But you mentioned that that's probably not going to help your marriage a whole lot either, is it?
No, and we're at this age, and so many of my friends are, where the kids do grow up, and they do get married, and they move on, and they need to leave and cleave. And so if you've done that, you're going to face a real hardship when they're gone and you and your husband really haven't invested in each other, because you're going to be even lonelier. It's going to really be a stark contrast.
And, Joe, that happens so often, that the kids go off to college or start a career or whatever it might be, and husband and wife wake up in the morning, they look over, and they go, who is that stranger next to me? And that's when so many difficulties and struggles and arguments begin in marriage, or even escalate in marriage. And so it's so important to have that relationship solid by the time those kids leave the home.
And I have had so many people I know, male or female, who have addressed the loneliness and the expectation and really learned that in some cases their spouse did not have an equal capacity that they did to love. And I know that sounds really harsh, but people have different capacities to do different things. And sometimes one person may be really affectionate and loving, and the other may just be a little bit more loose. Can the loose person learn to love more and to meet that person's love language? Yes, but sometimes we also have to accept it's not going to look exactly like I thought, but what we have is good, and it's our marriage. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Well, and, you know, you mentioned that we should prioritize time together, and yet I know a lot of people are in that other stage where the children are small and they're having difficulty, and you had five of them. How did you ever find time to prioritize time together, and how did you physically do that?
Okay, so three of our kids were biological, and then when they were 14, 12, and 9, we adopted a 9-year-old and a 12-year-old. So we actually had 2 9-year-olds. 2 12-year-olds, and a 14-year-old. And I can tell you, when you adopt older children, it requires a huge time investment. So when people tell me that, I say, I do understand. I understand. I know. However, you still can say, all right, you know what? We are going to get a sitter one night a month if that's all we can afford. Or we're going to talk to one of our parents or an aunt or an uncle or somebody. You still have to make time. Or, and we've done this, we're going to get up at 5 a.m. and have breakfast together before the kids wake up.
And the key here, Joe, is being intentional. Being intentional about spending that time together and committing to one another to do it. And that means actually putting it on the calendar. So Susan and I would put on the calendar, and it really wasn't every week. Some people say a date night every single week. Well, that wasn't really realistic for us, so it was really every other week when we did that. And there were seasons as well, as Susan said, we'd even get up early and spend time in the morning. But spending that one-on-one time together without interruption with your spouse is absolutely critical.
And we were super committed to being at our kids' games and volunteering and their sports and their music and everything. But there were times when we said, you know, we have a date night, and now they have a makeup game on that night, and we're going to send our child with another parent, and we're going to keep our date night. It's okay to miss one event in your child's life. Yes, we want to be there for everything, but sometimes I find that we are literally becoming slaves to our children and our activities at the cost of our marriage.
And by the way, one other thing, Joe, on this is that there were times when I felt like we weren't spending enough time together and that our time together wasn't a priority. So I actually spoke up about it and addressed it with Susan. The danger is when one spouse is silent about it and is not addressing the issue as it comes up. And then, again they become frustrated and then bitter and then angry, and other issues occur as a result of it.
Hmm. You know, I just had a parent say to me yesterday that he and his wife made a commitment that their sporting events that their children are doing, he said, well, they're playing. They're the ones who are playing. It's their choice to play. I'm not a watcher. I don't need to watch them. They're still getting the enjoyment out of the playing. And I thought, well, that's a pretty good way to look at it, because sometimes we do become slaves, whether we're driving or watching or whatever it is that we're doing. And maybe it won't decrease their enjoyment just because we're not there for every single game.
Well, I think it's just so important to be there for our kids, but also what you can do is combine it. Have a little picnic with your wife on the sidelines. It's not like at a swim meet, especially as our kids were growing up. I remember there was an hour between each of the times when our child swam, so it could be some time when Susan and I just spent time together one-on-one.
Yeah.
Well, and we find that we end up dropping our children off for their events 45 minutes or an hour early as well, and that's some great time to just be able to sit and chat together.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And if you kind of get a rhythm for what your kids are doing, sometimes, you know, the kids don't play the whole game. And so you go and you catch what they do, and then you bug out and go to dinner.
Yeah. And so it's good to take advantage of that time instead of each of you going to your phones and doing texts and emails. It's just, hey, let's go grab some coffee in the next half an hour before our child's game starts or before their practice starts.
Well, I have that gentleman's words in my head, but then I also have my dad's words in my head, who we were just sitting at a hockey game together, and he said, enjoy every minute of it because it goes really fast, and then they're gone.
He is a very wise man.
It does.
That's true. Does.
And I have to say, our kids were so cute. They would always look for us, everything they did. Did you see that? Did you see that? And I often had to, like, remove myself from all the women because I would be invariably get chatting and I'd miss the shot, you know?
Well, that's funny because my son, who's playing hockey, will say, Mom, I looked at you, but you were covering your face again. So I don't know why, but sometimes it gets too hard to watch. So that's just that's my issue.
Yeah.
Well, Mark and Susan Merrill, I want to thank you for taking some time to talk to us today. Their books are called Lists to Love By for Busy Wives and Lists to Love By for Busy Husbands. We'll have a link to their website as well on our website at myfaithradio.com. Just click on Connecting Faith. Mark and Susan, thanks so much for spending some time with us today.
You were such a fun pleasure. Thank you for having us.
Joe, we appreciate it.
Thank you, and just have a blessed day, and I hope you're working on that teenager book, because then I want to have you on again.
Okay.
You better get working.
All right, get to work. All right, thanks so much. That's Mark and Susan Merrill of Family First, and we will be right back on Connecting Faith. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. Just a fun conversation with Mark and Susan Merrill and their book, A List to Love By for Busy Wives and Busy Husbands. If you missed that show and you'd like to catch it, you can go to our website at myfaithradio.com. Click on Connecting Faith, and there are podcasts of all of our shows there. We're going to talk a little bit more about marriage now with my conversation about a strengths-based marriage with Marriage Today's Jimmy Evans and certified Gallup strengths coach Alan Kelsey. Coming up.
Most people think there's something wrong with their spouse. And I've done marriage for 35 years. I've been a marriage expert for 35 years. And so I've done tons of counseling, you know, everything. And most people, in most marriages, there's a dominant spouse. There's a spouse that's stronger than the other. Okay. And even if they act as equals, there's a spouse stronger than the other. And in most marriages, the dominant spouse begins a narrative that, if you would change, our marriage would be better. Hmm. If you would, you're the problem. If you would change, our marriage would be healed. But in fact, what they're actually trying to do is to change the unchangeable. The surest way to fail is try to change the unchangeable. I'm a pilot. I fly airplanes. If I try to change the law of gravity, I'm going to kill myself. It's an unchangeable. You can respect it or you can die. God made your spouse in their mother's womb different. They're fearfully and wonderfully made. And so when we take the Clifton StrengthFinder assessment, and it's just unbelievably accurate, is science, 40 years of science applied to this. And one after the other, you see couples And we say to them, when we tell them their strengths, and they took the assessment, but when we tell them their strengths and talk about them, one of the questions we always ask is, do you agree with this? They'll say, absolutely. Mm. They'll just shake their heads and go, this explains, like you said about your husband, Joe, is that, you know, we see ourselves and we see our spouse. But the point being, in many cases, when people take the strength finders, it's healing, because what it says to them is, what you have believed all these months or years was something wrong with your spouse is actually their strength. And let me give you one example of this very quickly. We had a pastor and his wife that the strength finder saved their marriage. So this was a couple of years ago before our book came out. And I was telling him about our book, Strength-Based Marriage. He said, well, that saved our marriage. I said, strength finders? He said, oh, yeah. He said, my number one gift is positivity, but my wife's number one gift is strategic. He said, so I like being positive. And he said, every time I said something, I would make a comment, and my wife would try to improve it or adjust it somehow. He said, drove me crazy. I just thought she's a nag. She's negative, and there's something wrong with her. He said, when I saw that her gift was strategic, and I read, see, strategic people always want to improve something. It's not a weakness, it's a strength. And he said, when I saw that my wife's number one strength was strategic, and I read the definition, I stopped being angry at her, and I started accepting her for who God made her to be. That's what strength does. Mm.
You know, Jimmy, you're talking about how it's such a great tool to help one spouse understand another. But, Alan, do you also hear from couples that doing an assessment like this is really a great way for an individual to understand themselves, to not think that there was something wrong with them as well?
That's exactly right, Joe. And you know, all psychologists almost universally will never agree on anything except this one idea. And it's that self-awareness is at the bottom of all development, all human development. We get better when we know who we are. And if you want to improve your marriage, you really can't do that until you truly understand who you are, and then you can advance to helping somebody else. And so this brings new wisdom and new insight into who you are as individuals. It brings healing to the internal dialogue that we all have, where we talk to ourselves, about the things we like, about the things we don't like, what we should be doing, what we shouldn't be doing, what we hold ourselves responsible to and not responsible to. It brings healing to all of that because it explains your inner motivation. For example, you have achiever and discipline. Listen, if you get up early to work out or go do something else like that, you're doing that out of a power that's given to you by God. You almost can't even help yourself. I understand that because I know what that feels like. My wife, on the other hand, does not share any of my strengths. And so when I get up early in the morning to go work out, she will occasionally roll gently over in the bed and mumble something like, I have no idea how you do that. And go back to sleep again. Well, it could be for me then to say proudly, well, I'm just a disciplined person and you're a lazy slob. If you'd get your butt out of bed, we'd be able to get something done. And really, think about the reality. I mean, how many arguments naturally start just that simply? Or I could go, wait a second, my wife is riddled with relationally powerful strengths, and her Superman powers work in a different place. Mine happen to land here, hers land there. It changes the landscape of my interaction completely. But it starts with me understanding myself first.
Alan, both you and Jimmy had mentioned that the key to really kind of getting into the content of this book is both people being willing to take this assessment and kind of understand a little bit about themselves. But what happens when one spouse is more interested in growth or improving the relationship, but the other spouse is not so willing?
Well, if what I would say to that, Joe, very good question. In most cases, one spouse is more interested than the other. Almost all marriage counseling is initiated by women. And they are more interested in the state of their marriage than their husbands. But let me say this. when redemptive love, 1 Peter 2 talks about how Jesus loved us when we were still in our sins. 1 Peter 3 comes right out of 1 Peter 2, says, wives, you need to do the same thing to your husbands when they're not doing the right thing. Husbands, you should do the same thing to their wives when they're not doing the right thing. So it's called redemptive love. It means the best person does the right thing first. And so rather than you say, well, my spouse is doing wrong, they're not sensitive, they're not working on marriage, great. But if one person is willing to work at it, that gives the marriage hope. So what I would suggest is this, the interested spouse, take the assessment, find out about yourself. The other thing, like I said, we have 2 hours of video. At the end of the book, we give you the key of how to look at these videos. You can go on there and pretty much figure out your spouse. You can, by just looking at the definitions of the strengths, you can pretty much figure out who your spouse is. Then begin to relate to them based on their strengths, celebrate their strengths. It opens a whole different world. Redemptive love means I'm coming into your world and I'm loving you when you don't deserve it. You know, if you treat a person how they deserve, that's not grace. That's law. That's merit. Everybody hates that. But what people love is they love to be treated better than they deserve. The other thing people love is to be seen. And one of the things that Alan says that I love is what happens when the strengths, when you begin to understand the strengths, is you get seen for the first time. Like I was talking about that couple on television. This man, this pastor, that his wife, he looked at his wife and said, I always thought there was something wrong with her. He turned and looked at her and said, I am so sorry. I have never understood who you are. And for the very first time, they've been married for like 25 years, she got seen for the first time. So when you understand your own strengths and you begin to examine your spouse and see them for who they are and begin to respect that, it has unbelievable potential to reinvigorate a marriage that is sick or maybe just stale.
Boy, what a great opportunity to kind of help your spouse be the best at whatever God has created them to be.
Yep, exactly. You're touching on one of the major themes in the book now, Joe, and it's the concept of affirmation. There's a big difference between praise and affirmation. Praise speaks specifically to what you do, and affirmation speaks specifically to who you are. They're not the same. And what we found is that affirmation is basically missing in the world today. It's missing in marriages. It's missing in relationships with kids. It's missing in workplaces. And the reason is because we don't know each other very well. But those five little words give you such insight into who the other person is. You can really speak true affirmation to your spouse. And when you do, it helps them feel seen in a way they have never had before.
Well, that was Strengths-Based Marriage, Build a Stronger Relationship by Understanding Each Other's Gifts. I highly recommend that. Love Gallup Strengths Finder. It really helps you understand yourself and your spouse. If you heard a little bit of our show but want to hear the rest, you can go to myfaithradio.com, click on Connecting Faith, and you can see all of our podcasts there if you want to hear the Strengths-Based Marriage conversation or what we had earlier today with Mark and Susan Merrill on List to Love By for busy husbands and busy wives. So a lot of great marriage advice today. Well, tomorrow, Neil Stavem is going to have a conversation with David Nasser. He escaped from Iran with his family during a violent religious uprising in 1979 and came to America, where he then faced a crisis of identity, both religious and personal, and then became a Christian. He's going to tell his story on his book, Jumping Through Fires, The Gripping Story of One Man's Escape from Revolution to Redemption. That's tomorrow with Neil Stavem on Connecting Faith at noon.
Monday, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yes,
I'm sorry.
Monday.
Don't. Yeah. Tomorrow's Saturday.
Yeah, we have the Best Of show, though, tomorrow.
Which
at noon.
Will also be good that? At noon. Yeah. But David's not going to be here until Monday. Thank
That's
you,
okay.
Ted.
Yeah, no
I just
problem.
Got back from vacation and my brain is not quite
yeah,
centered
you're settling
yet.
Settling back in. I understand. No problem. Also, want to mention that the Kay Warren Choose Joy devotional is available It's a wonderful gift maybe you could give to somebody if you win. You go there, and we're giving one away every day all the way up till Easter on April 16th.
And so, you just go to our website, correct?
Yeah, myfaithradio.com. You'll see it on the main page there, the Choose Joy Devotional. Sign up. Your name will be in the drawing, and one is going out the door every day up till Easter.
That is very exciting, and so hopefully you can get that. And otherwise, we will just see you next week on Connecting Faith. Thanks so much for joining us today, and we look forward to seeing you soon.
Thanks for listening to this Connecting Faith podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support, and you can make a gift right now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of Connecting Faith, you can subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and growing the awareness and impact of Connecting Faith.